like the red lights going up.
Hey, this is Murph from the 5-Yard Rush podcast, Fantasy Pros, Pro Football Network. You're tuning into the Dynasty Hot Seat, Certified Inferno. Let's do this. Yes, hello everybody and welcome back once again to the Dynasty Hot Seat, the only Dynasty show out there that is a certified inferno. And today we're back, another great guest returning. These guests have just been awesome so far, right? And we've got, I mean, if you don't know, this is actually Dynasty Hot Seat royalty. He is the inaugural member of the Hall of Flame itself. So, I mean, just rolling out the red carpet for you, mate. Murph, back on the show. Murph, it is amazing to see you again, mate. How you doing?
I'm doing well, mate. I think I'm only in the Hall of Flame because of the hair, but we'll take it. You know, we'll take any accolades that come our way, regardless of how they happen. No, it's a pleasure to be back. This is the only show that I do an intro and absolutely balls it up as well. So I'm glad you didn't save the outtake because it was horrendous. But yeah, no, so good to be back. I love being here. So I can't believe the fantasy season is over. I'm in mourning. I'm wearing black because it's a sad time. I'm still playing fantasy football this weekend. It's fine, but it is sad that I don't have any championships to play for this week.
Wait, I was about to say, are you like a degenerate like me? I've signed up for some playoff fantasy football. Have you done that as well?
Yeah. No, I'm running a few. Yeah. So, So I've even got a draft going on right now. Playoff fantasy draft. Yeah. I'm not too happy with it. It's took CeeDee Lamb and then CJ Stroud. And I need to see who I got at running back because I queued. But I took a running back. I'm hoping I got someone half decent at running back in the third round. So, on paper, you go, oh, that's pretty good. But do you really think if my whole hopes are relying on the Texans and the Cowboys making the Super Bowl, I'm going to be a bit lightweight. So, we'll see what happens. But I'm going for like high ceiling early and then hopefully just have a few players in the background that can just get me over the line.
I love it. That's a good strategy. I'm doing my draft on Friday. My first ever one. I've never done it before, so it's my first ever one. I'm going in light, but you know, this time next year, Murphy, you'll probably see me in a couple of other leagues doing the same thing. Because I can't help myself. And for guys who are just joining, who are new, hey, thanks for joining. If you've not already, you know how this works, right? You know I want you to like it. You know I want you to subscribe, right? I'm on YouTube. That's what everyone wants. So go ahead. Why don't you click that like and that subscribe button, and let's get right into the show. We're chatting, as you know by the title, 2024 Rookies. Murph, you've compiled an amazing sort of first-round mock draft for us to go through, but before we really get stuck into that, we were chatting off air about just some like general things that we've noticed about this class. It's real interesting. You're like me at the minute, really struggling to put together what order these guys should go in, right?
Yeah, I think... Let's take Marvin Harrison out of the conversation, right?
Yeah.
He is in a class of his own from a skill position perspective. So I think we can pretty much take him out and say he is the bona fide star of this class. Yeah. I look at the rest of them and there's a lot of really good players. Are there elite level talent? I'm not sure. But there is a lot of really good players that I think it's hard to see. I think you're going to see some players be reached. And this is the trend that's been going on the last couple of years. You know, we've been seeing players go in the first round of drafts, real NFL drafts, go that shouldn't have had any business there. We're talking about Jalen Reagor. We're talking about Quentin Johnston last year. You know, and it's not too late for Quentin Johnston. It is too late for Jalen Reagor, but it's not
too late. We can put the nail in that coffin, I think. Yeah,
but we see it every year.
Yeah,
that people are crying out for playmakers and they are reaching. Jameson Williams is one that's really in an interesting spot coming in this year with the suspension and injuries. Yeah. And he's sitting behind Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's going to be a really difficult spot for him to get to where he needs to get to. And you're looking at this and you're thinking, every year there's going to be at least one guy that gets overdrafted. I think this year there could be more. I think you're either going to see a run of wide receivers and people get spooked, kind of what we saw last year. Johnson goes off the board and it's bang, 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 bang. And he literally...
He wasn't even invited to attend. They took him though, because I think they panicked.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. But wait, you say he panicked. He was the first one off the board. Yeah. So they clearly loved the guy. So there clearly was a love. And then the people went, uh-oh, well, if he's gone, the run start, and it started. Mm-hmm. And if you miss out on that run, and every year there is a position that when a run happens, people go. We see it with left tackles quite frequently. I think back to 2020, when there was that run of left tackles and Tampa traded up to get theirs because they were like, well, we're not taking the risk. And, picked Tristan Wirfs and went well. And last year it was wide receivers. We've seen it with running back. We've seen it. Yeah. We've seen it with safeties. We've seen it with, there's always a position you see a run. I think we could see it with wide receiver again this year because I think with the running backs, I'm not enamored by this class. I don't think it's a bad class, but I'm struggling to see the highlight players here. There's a couple of good players, and I think there's a couple of players that if things break right for them, they could do something special. But I think I think really I'm looking at this thinking good wide receiver class, which we've seen that the last few have been.
It's
a below average running back class. Yeah. Quarterback class is, I'd say it's a par class. I think there's some really interesting players.
Yeah. I
think very deep, contrary to belief. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see where a couple of these guys go. Cause we are in a scenario, you could see five go in the first round. We're in a scenario, we see three go in the first round. So I think that's also really interesting. And it's a very weak quarterback position right now with all these injuries. A lot of uncertainty.
Hugely.
You've got new head coaches coming in. There's an opportunity for someone who is off the radar, who isn't as favored, to get into this position and absolutely crush it in 2024. So there's lots of little permutations and things bubbling along. I think it's going to be a fascinating draft. I think this is definitely one of the more fascinating drafts. I think we're going to see the mock drafts, and I think you're going to see bigger disparity in this.
Yes.
In these mock drafts, especially early on before we get to than I think we've seen in previous years. I think the only time that we've had any real difficulty was quarterbacks with the Malik Willis and
Kenny Pickett.
Kenny Pickett and Ridder, and people were wanting there to be a quarterback because people were so used to a quarterback going in the top five, and people were like, quarterback's got to go in the top 10. It's got to go in the top 10. And people were freaking out because actually we knew that there was no. And that's the thing. If you know the talent isn't there, let's not try and force it in mock drafts. Let's not try and force it. The people that are paid to do this job do it pretty well. As much as we can sometimes pick fault at picks and my famous thing as a Buccaneers fan is I'll never forget in 2017 when the Buccaneers traded down. They could have got Derwin James. They traded with the Buffalo Bills so that Buffalo Bills went and selected Josh Allen. And they moved down to 14 and picked and Derwin James is still on the board and they passed on him again and took Vita Vea. And people sit there and go, at the time, people were... our pocket, there were people that were wanting to fire the GM. Yeah. And like, light's got to go. What is he doing? We need a safety. We need Derwin James. VFA has turned out to be a fantastic pick.
Yeah.
One of the best, if not the best run stoppers in the game. That's worked out pretty well. So this is what I mean. Like, there's going to be fans that are going to get disappointed on draft night. Just let the thing play out a few years. Because there's a great example there where fans just absolutely lose their mind. And then turned out the GM knew exactly what he was doing. He picked a guy that managed to stop the run, made the defense better. And then he went on 3 years later and won a ring. So
that's all well and good, Murph. But If the Kansas City Chiefs don't draft a wide receiver, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. Right?
What?
I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose my shit.
Why? You got Rashee Rice last year.
No, apart from him, nobody else in that team can catch a damn ball.
Yeah, so that's what free agency's for, dude. Like,
yeah, I'm maybe not asking about it already, but yeah,
don't reach right. for I one.
I know we should stick. Yeah. Well, we'll be picking with the last pick again this year anyway, so we might have to reach on one anyway. Right?
That's spicy, my friend. That is spicy.
Probably not though, right? So yeah, there's lots to chat about this class. Murph, let's get rocking right into it, right? You've put in a list to me with your 2024 first round. Let's get rolling right in with pick number one. It's really between two people in my eyes at this moment. You've gone though with Marvin Harrison Jr. Tell me why you've taken Marvin Harrison. Is this a super flex? Why have you gone with Harrison above Caleb Williams?
I just look at this and I think, yes, as we've seen last year, quarterback is a really difficult position. And I think you've got to really be looking at this and thinking, we should be taking quarterback, right? We've got to be taking quarterback. All these injuries, more opportunities than ever. But then the guys on the waiver wire do a job. Jake Browning did a job. Joe Flacco won you leagues.
Wow, like, yeah.
Like, the bottom line is, we saw last year the clamor to get Bryce Young. That pick is not fostering. And the bottom line is, a lot of it, I don't like to sit here and say that landing spot matters a great deal, but I think in quarterbacks it matters a lot more. And it's likely that Caleb Williams is going to be picked up more likely than not, either by a rookie head coach or a head coach on the hot seat. So if the Bears take him, which I advocate, by the way, I think the Bears should. I think the Bears think should say,
yeah.
And then Matt Eberflus is the most on the hot seat head coach we have had in a few years. They fired everyone. They fired his entire offensive staff.
Dog walker, the whole lot gone.
Yeah, exactly. That. Like the guy who holds the clipboard, everyone's gone. Yeah. Like he hasn't even got anyone that he's probably got the guys who orders the marker pens has probably gone out of the building. Like this is what I mean. He has got no one left. If they do not come out of the blocks and win three of their first six games, he is probably gone. And the last time we saw this situation was with Mike Vrabel. How's Mike Vrabel doing right now?
Oh, I mean, I still feel... I feel sorry for the guy, but he's probably going to get a job somewhere else and be much more successful than he was ever going to be at the Titans. Well, but yeah,
I think he was somewhat the architect of his... I don't think he's entirely to blame for what's happened there, but I think he's somewhat the architect. We're well digressed. My point is that I don't think Caleb Williams... he's going to walk into an amazing situation in his first year. And so you're sitting there thinking, how quickly does it get better? Mm. How quickly does it get better for him? Whereas I think Marvin Harrison can come out of the gate and he can be highly competitive. Yeah. And then you look at the longevity of the careers of these young wide receivers now. They're productive almost immediately if they're elite. They're winning you leagues early on, much earlier on than they ever used to. And you're getting the same amount of mileage, if not maybe more, out of these players than you are getting out of these quarterbacks. So I just think for me, Marvin Harrison is the safer pick. Yeah. I think he's the more productive pick. I think he's someone that you can put into your lineup straight away. In fact, if you're in a super flex and you're sitting on the 101 and the 102 wants to trade up and get Caleb Williams, do the deal, pick yourself an extra pick. And take Marvin Harrison. I think that's what I'd be looking to do if I'm sitting there with any 101s. Move back enough to get Marvin Harrison. If not, I'm taking Marvin Harrison Jr. I am confident this guy is going to be a stud. We've got lineage. We've got pedigree. His dad was a pretty good player. That's always a pretty good sign. Whenever you see these players and, you know, we're seeing it at the moment with, say, Antoine Winfield Jr., his dad was a pretty good player. And we're seeing that the next generation, he's grown up in the league. It's not, it's different. He's grown up knowing this. He was almost destined to be in the league. So I just can't move away from Marvin Harrison Jr. I just think Caleb Williams is going to be a good player.
Yeah.
But I think Marvin Harrison is going to be an elite player. I really believe that. And I think take the best player in the draft.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's really good advice. I love that you said I think he's the safer pick, because I know even though Caleb is meant to be one of these like generational quarterback guys, we've seen those guys like field before. I mean, I don't want to say Trevor Lawrence has like failed. He's done well. No. But I bet you're kicking yourself. Like if you had like the option to take, I don't know if Trevor Lawrence was the same class as Ja'Marr Chase, but I bet you want Ja'Marr Chase, right? Was he in the same class as Ja'Marr Chase?
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet you take Ja'Marr Chase now, right? Yeah. And Ja'Marr Chase was the Ja'Marr Chase was even less than Marvin Harrison, right?
Much less. I mean, we're talking about Ja'Marr Chase was the guy who was coming into the season as we don't even know if he can catch the football without the
lines. Yeah, because there weren't lines in the ball. Yeah. Yeah. So you got Marvin Harrison here, who's like a super safe prospect. You very rarely see these like slam dunk wide receiver prospects fail. I mean, unless you go back to like Sammy Watkins, maybe. Right, he's maybe the last one that has maybe failed, but I mean, look at how long ago that was, right? And where he is
exactly that. And the argument that people are going to put against Marvin Harrison Jr., well, what if he goes to the Patriots and they don't have a quarterback? Or what if he goes to a different team and there's not a quarterback? I reference you Garrett Wilson. Yeah. Garrett Wilson was playing with basically the mascot at times last year, and he still put up a relatively productive fantasy. Yes, okay. The ceiling wasn't there. Yes, okay, he wasn't the wide receiver one. He didn't return you an ADP because people got excited at the Rodgers connection, whatever. He still returned a top 20 fantasy season, and he literally had some of the worst quarterback play that we've ever seen throwing in the ball. And that's the difference. These kind of players, the Garrett Wilsons, the Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase has overcome. He's had, backup QBs throwing in the ball this season, Jake Browning. Yeah. Marvin Harrison will be a productive wide receiver with any NFL mascot throwing him the ball. I'm that confident in him that he will be that good a player that I just think I want to take the best player in the draft. I also want to take the guy I'm the most excited about in the draft.
Yeah.
Like Caleb Williams, we've seen with quarterbacks, with the exception of one or two in recent years, they haven't come in and really lit it up. Not immediately and not even after a couple of years. I mean, forget like the last ones that really lit it up. Josh Allen took over a year. Lamar Jackson took over a year. They were really it. Like no one has really come in as a rookie, as a sophomore, and has really threatened the top. Jalen Hurts is the last guy.
CJ Stroud's getting there. He's not quite at the top echelon.
No, he's nearly there. So he is probably the exception that kind of proves this rule. And again, he wasn't everyone's favorite in last year's class. Jalen Hurts wasn't the favorite in everyone's class. Yeah. Like, this is what I mean. Like, I went on record last year that I thought CJ Stroud would have a better year one than Bryce Young. But I thought Bryce Young would have a better career. Now, when you're in the David Tepper world, then all bets are off. But I want to take the best player in the draft. And I think for me, that's best Marvin Harrison Jr. And it wouldn't shock me, by the way, if he goes 102. In the actual NFL draft, it would not shock me that someone trades up to the 2 pick and takes him. Wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. Imagine that. If Kansas City went all the way up and got Marvin Harrison, you might as well put the yellow jacket on him now.
Yeah.
Put the gold jacket on him. Because him and Patrick Mahomes will dominate the league for the next 10 years.
I'm just so sad.
That'd be so sick.
But it'd be so sick. Yeah.
That'd be so sick. Like, I don't want that to happen, but I do. Yeah. That would be so mental. That'd be so awesome. Yeah.
I'm gonna get a vision board. I'm gonna get everything I can. I'm gonna get voodoo dolls. Get whatever I can get my hands on. It's happening. Marvin Harrison. Yeah. He's 101. We kind of talked about Caleb. Caleb is still your 102, right? So we can say some nice things about Caleb Williams too, right? He's still a real interesting prospect.
So I said this to you off air. So I think for me, Caleb Williams is in this sort of Justin Herbert kind of world, and that people are going to listen to that before I explain and go, they're not even remotely the same, and they're not the same quarterback.
Yeah.
What I mean by this is that when Justin Herbert came into the process, he was at Oregon. It was a very system-based quarterbacking system. So he was playing against his own, almost against himself. It was a 3-drop rhythm instead of a 5 and a 7-drop rhythm. So he was having to drop back less.
It really threw off his timing. It didn't really showcase his footwork. A lot of the criticisms of Justin Herbert before he came into the league was he's very static, he's very wooden, he's not very mobile, not very agile. It's going to take a lot of sacks, takes too long on the ball. And then actually, when you start to sit there and you analyze everything, and it really only opened up to me around his pro day and the combine, when you look at the agility and you looked at the arm strength and you looked at everything and think, hang on a minute, he's doing 5 and 7 step drops here. So he looks a lot more agile. His three cone wasn't bad at all. We're not talking lightning, but he wasn't bad. He had some wheels, and he's demonstrated in the NFL he has some wheels. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not Justin Fields. He's not going to be this ultimate playmaker and make loads of plays on his feet, but he's mobile. He can get out of the pocket. He can pass on the run. There were all the big criticisms of him coming into the league, and he completely smashed it. He looks like a value pick at 105 or the fifth overall to the Chargers, and he looks like a franchise quarterback. Caleb Williams is coming in at exactly pretty much a similar side of belt, that he is in a system in USC which doesn't actually suit his talent. He's come off a bad year. And this is where people who just stat watch and just look at box scores will look, hey, he didn't have a good year. He's a risk. He's a red flag. Actually, when you sit there and look at the tape, the things I want to see now in his pro day, at the combine, how does he do in agility? How does he do with passing on the run? How does he do with, and let's see some of that mobility, let's see some of that playmaking ability, but let's see him in a bit more of a freed up situation where he's not feeling very restricted, having to release the ball early, having to play in a very prescripted offense. That doesn't actually play into his skill set. And he was another quarterback for me. I looked at him and very briefly last year and looked at him as a quarterback who was playing inside of himself. He was playing quite restricted.
Yeah.
So this is where I think he is a very safe prospect. My only concern on him is the ceiling. And I've said this because I'm not ready to crown him a generational talent. I don't think we're looking at a generational talent. I think we're looking at an elite prospect in this class and probably over the last couple of classes. If I was to sit here and stack him up over the last few classes, I think probably back to that Tua and Burrow and Herbert class. Forget that one. Every class since, I think he's probably the best quarterback since then. So over the last 3 years. And I think that's a good place to be, and I think he will have a fine career. My only other concern for him is just that landing spot. Does he get a rookie head coach, or does he get a coach, I said this, a coach who is on the hot seat? And that will be what hampers him, because we saw this with Trevor Lawrence. They bring in Urban Meyer. That was a disaster, a mitigated disaster. I was telling everybody this, that, you know, I'm a Florida Gators fan. I went to the University of Florida. Urban Meyer doesn't know how to coach. He's never known how to coach. He's a talent recruiter. He can't coach. So Caleb Williams is going to need to be coached. So he's going to need a really, really good one.
Yeah.
Matt Eberflus or whoever they bring in, if the Bears draft him, that really worries me for him. That really worries me. And I'll be thinking, well, who's the next guy? And who is the guy that can unlock him? So I think there's going to be a bit of uncertainty, but if I'm looking at Superflex and I'm looking at quarterbacks, Caleb Williams for me is, I think, he's a top draw player. He's going to have this potential to put up very, very good numbers.
Yeah,
I don't think you're going to see it early. I think he's the kind of guy that if you're plugging in and needing a quarterback, if you're picking at the bottom of the class, at the top of the board, so
yeah,
probably had a bad year. You're probably going to need a quarterback. I think set the expectation levels. He's not going to drive you to a championship year one, but he should drive you to a top 16 at the position. That's kind of where I haven't gone into evals and looks, but I kind of really expect him to be coming in QB 16, QB 17, really early, rough numbers off the top of my head. That's kind of where I would expect him to come in and perform.
Yeah, for me with Caleb, it seems to be, and he kind of highlighted as well, he seems to have a lot of these gifts that you want. You've seen him make every kind of throw. A lot of it seems to be in between the ears. And I wonder if that is because he's like, oh, I'm in this system, I need to play like this. And then he's also like, oh, my defense is horrendous. We're already down by 20 in most games. I'm going to have to make a play. And he's got too many things going on. So you're right. That coach is going to really, really be important just to strip it back a little bit and let him be him.
See, where there is some similarity to his game is a bit like Jameis Winston, where you've just said it. He will come in and he will develop this complex of, this is all on me. I've got to come in and I've got to do this.
Yeah.
Do you know why CJ Stroud was so successful this year? Is the coaching staff just said, just go make throws.
Yeah.
There's no expectation. No expectation. We win 3 games. We win 13 games. It genuinely doesn't matter. Just go out there and make all your mistakes now. Learn on the job training. It was literally just go out there, go throw the ball 50 times a game and just see what happens. Make all those mistakes, get your reads. And he was allowed to fail. He was in an environment that said, hey, you throw 3 interceptions. He didn't. But if he did, it would have been like, whatever. You won't do that again, will you? And that was the kind of environment he was allowed to fail. And he didn't because he felt so comfortable. You look at Bryce Young, and he was put in a situation where he's like, we've got to be competitive. We've got to win the NFC South this year because the NFC South is a terrible division. We've got to win the division. And he was put all this pressure with a new head coach that spent a lot of money on. Expectation was high because the South was a crapshoot and they were in the mix of the division early. And he wasn't allowed to fail. And he was put in, and the pressure was put on him. And he looked like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders at times. And that's the difference between a well-run organization and Nick Caserio. You've got to give him his due at the Texans. He's done a great job. And he built a culture with D'Amico Ryans. Yeah. They allowed Stroud to go out there and make plays. Just do what you got to do. And then, you know what? He just embraced it. And that's what I mean. And if Caleb is given the same environment that CJ Stroud is, he's going to have a good year. Maybe not the same as CJ Stroud, but he's going to have a good year. But he is going to have to learn to throw from the pocket. That's the one thing he's got to learn, to stay in the pocket, stand and make throws.
Yeah.
Because they will shut that box down. They will enclose him in, and they'll go out there. The game plan for Caleb Williams is, all right, kid, we'll give you time in the box. You stay there. And if you beat us with the arm, all power to you. But you're not going to beat us with the legs.
Williams, Caleb Williams there. Like, just can't wait to see what he's going to do, right? And at 103, you're sticking with quarterback. You're going Drake May, a very, very different prospect. You mentioned Justin Herbert earlier. That is a name I have heard thrown around a little bit comparing to Drake May. I'm not sure if his arm's as good, but I can see it a little bit.
It's close. I think it's pretty close. I think he's got great control with the ball. I think his placement of balls, I think he just throws a very pretty football. You look at him and you just think he's poised, he's collected. He is like, if you were to sit there and draw up a quarterback, it would probably be Drake May, right?
He's the prototype, right?
Yeah. I think for me, the only thing he's got to worry about is just cleaning up the mistakes. Again, I think he can have a little bit of this hero complex. Mm. Where he goes, I've just got to win games on my own. And he'll just throw a ball and there'll be absolutely no one in a Tar Heel shirt near him. Yeah. Oh, a North Carolina shirt. And he'd be like, oh, okay, there's 4 defenders that just got a free grab and a free interception. And that is on his tape. Again, he's going to need coaching. He's going to need development. But I think he is... I think he's got everything. And when I'm talking from a fantasy perspective, his outcomes can exceed Williams's. Williams is going to have a bit of a safer floor because he's got some wheels. He can get outside. He can make plays. Drake May can put up a Justin Herbert type rookie season.
Yeah.
And he could finish in the top 8 in fantasy next year. And he will surprise a lot of people. I really like him. It's going to be really interesting to see where this universe has him in the NFL. I tell you what, if Eric Bieniemy stays in Washington, either as the head coach or as the OC, and I've got to be honest, I think Eric Bieniemy is going to end up as the head coach of the Commanders.
I think he should.
Because I think
he's long overdue.
Like, well, I think he's long overdue, but I think also, why would you bring him into a head coaching situation that he was on the hot seat, Ron Rivera? You know, he hasn't performed for a few years. I think it was to take a good look at him internally and think, Maybe we'll just promote from with it. That might not happen. They have brought in external people.
Yeah.
They're going to do an evaluation. That could all pan out. But I think
the guy had Sam Howell leading the NFL in passing yards, for goodness sake. Like, come on.
This is what I mean. Imagine Eric Bieniemy and
yeah. Trick me.
It could go to the moon. Like, this is seriously could light up. So I tell you what, if you're doing a rookie draft after the draft, if Eric Bieniemy is head coach of the Washington Commanders and Trent Mate goes to Washington, hey, guess where he's going on my board? He going to the top. Oh. He might even go above Marvin Harrison Jr. I might stick him all the way to the top because I think that combination could literally go to the moon. I think it could literally take off because that's a scary proposition. You give Eric Bieniemy Trent Mate, oh boy.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun watch. Oh, I'll subscribe to that channel and watch that. That could be a lot of fun.
Agreed. Yeah. So let's hope for Drake's sake he ends up there. And move on to next at 104. We're back to the wide receiver well here for a guy. Speaking of a fun watch, Malik Nabers, this guy, I just love watching him. It's just lightning in a bottle, right?
Oh my word. This kid's got everything. He's gotta be like they should do, you know how they got like on cars like that 0 to 60 stat. I want to see what they should do it for wide receivers, right? And they go from like 0 to 10 mile an hour, how long it takes them to get there. I reckon Malik Nabers would absolutely smash that metric across anyone in the NFL or be very, very close. He is so quick and like, but off the blocks quick. His acceleration is just ridiculous. My only downside on him is just that catching ability. Like contested catches, he's going to need to beat people on routes. And I think he might have a longer adjustment period. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. can walk into any NFL setup and be, hey, I'm a pro. And he's there day one.
Yeah,
I think Nabers is going to take a little bit longer. And I think he is going to be slightly quarterback dependent. Mm-hmm. I don't think he is necessarily one of these guys who can put up with a Zach Wilson and be productive. No. I think he will struggle. So I think his two things for me are he's going to have to beat NFL corners on routes. That's going to take time. And then I do think he's somewhere got to build a bit of upper body strength just to give him a bit of contested catch ability. That's my only thing on him, but I love everything about him. He nails that. We're talking about he could be, I hate the comparisons game, but we like he, Garrett Wilson,
Maybe
even Stephon Diggs with that sort of caliber of a player.
I've heard Diggs. Yeah.
Yeah. So I put him in that kind of caliber of a player, but he's going to need some things to break right for him. And there's some things he's going to have to work on. So this is what I mean. I don't think he is. I think he has the potential to be an exceptional player, but I think he's going to need some things to break for him. It also wouldn't completely shock me if he crashed and burned, but I look at ceiling when I'm doing these sorts of things. Malik Nabers could be a guy we're talking about next season as someone who is, you know, touching the top 24 wide receiver in the NFL from a fantasy perspective. If things break right for him, he's also a guy that could end up in the mid 50s, and that he's got such a wide range of outcomes. But I believe in the talent. I think it's all there for him.
I've been looking at the standings for like who's drafting. I'm seeing the Chargers, and I'm just struggling to see how they pass on Malik Nabers there. Right, were they at 5?
Yeah,
so they're going Brock Bowers or Malik Nabers. I think I don't see how they don't, right?
No, I definitely think that's got to be the route that they go. But then new head coach, we could really see what happens when that situation changes and what they're. The thing is, when you've got so many head coaching positions that are completely out and new GMs, they might go for a really safe route. They might trade down. Accumulate talent. It's hard to tell what they're going to do, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's stick at the wide receiver well then, going into 105. You got Rome Odunze, who obviously just fell short in that championship game recently. But man, he had a brilliant season with Michael Penix
Jr. Absolutely. And listen, the one thing I got to say is Washington Husky players are always massively underrated. And always deliver really well. I talked about Vea Vea on this show already. Cade Otton as a tight end came from there. You know, there's a whole series of players that have come from Washington that have been relatively productive. It's the way that they are produced, that the mantra of the type of player that comes through. They carry themselves really well. They have good leadership skills. They have good just the way they are as people. It really is. Washington's one of these schools that they really produce students right, and they go into the world. You're never hearing any trouble in that school. You're not hearing about scandals. You're not hearing about, you know, players over their station. Even the real fantastic run they had this year, all you saw was the harmony of the team. All these big personalities gelling together. It's a beautiful thing.
Their entire campaign this year was, they had the hashtag us versus us.
Yeah.
You've really seen that, right?
100%. And like, for me, I'm probably one of the, I really value like leadership and personality almost as much as talent, because I think you can overcome talent to a degree. It might cap your ceiling, but if you want it and you've got that determination and that leadership ability, that is going to take you so much further than the person who is naturally talented, but perhaps doesn't have that ability to just shake off adversity.
Someone like Austin Eckler stands up there, right? A guy that was undrafted, but it's just this like dog and this leader and this like great guy comes in and is a superstar for so many years, right? Because he had that like natural leadership.
And how many guys have we seen come in with incredible talent and flop? And it's because they don't have that. They don't have that grit. It's kind of the best word for it. And I think we're talking about a player here who has absolutely got it in spades. Also, we're talking about, I just talked about someone who doesn't do well in contested catches. Let's flip the narrative. This guy is like Mike Evans. He literally will turn 50-50s into 75-25s. He's the favorite for every 50-50. He's going to come up with a lot of those. He's going to be your classic. I'm just going to put it up there to the big guy. He's going to see if he can come down with it. And he will more often than not.
Yeah.
So I think he's quarterback proof in that regard. I think the one thing that he needs to work on is just creating separation.
He's weirdly very good at it in the end zone, but less so outside of it. Yeah.
You're not going to see big 40, 50-yard plays. Mm. That's what you're going to see, a lot of 20-yard plays from him.
Yeah.
And like you said, red zone. So I think he's going to score TDs. I think he's going to get a lot of crucial first downs. I don't see him breaking away and getting these 40, 50-yard catches. Great. So I think it depends, from a fantasy perspective, how much does that cap him? And it's weird, because although body type, he's not really like Mike Evans, I think fantasy production, he's going to be very similar to Mike Evans. I think he's going to have a lot of boom bust weeks, and it's going to be touchdown dependent. And he's the kind of guy who's going to need to get 10 touchdowns a season to put himself in the top 30 position.
Yeah. I'll let you finish.
No, but that's pretty much it. So I project him as someone who's going to polarize people, but I think he is a bit like Mike Evans. I think he's going to have really good weeks, and in his weeks, he's going to go absolutely missing.
How much weight do you put into the biggest knock I've seen in Odunze is, he's a fourth year player, because he's not an early declare. But when I looked into it last offseason, he put on like 15 pounds of muscle, transformed his body, and it's now a completely different player. So I'm almost willing to be like, that guy that we've seen the first 3 years is a different guy. So I'm almost willing to say I'm not too bothered about the late declare because of that. He's made so many changes.
And I think that's where context is so crucial. Yeah. So I think, you could look at the statistics and say he's not an early declare, therefore the chances of him overcoming aren't great. Mm. But then you've just painted the picture. He's completely redeveloped himself into a completely different style of player and has become productive. So, and going forward, what I like about his transformation is he's changed himself into a type of wide receiver that isn't as common, whereas now you're seeing more of these track star style receivers. And going for flat track speed, he knew he weren't going to win there. So what he's done is he's put himself on the other side. I'm going to make myself this big red zone target. I'm going to put myself out there to win contested catches, and I'm going to build a role archetypal of what wide receivers, what people wanted 10 years ago from their wide receiver. So it's almost like a throwback coming back round. And I think that plays better for him because I think there's teams now, I think of Miami, who have got two great track stars, and you know, you can't knock what they do. But you know what? At times in big games, when you know your quarterback just can't get that separation, just needs to heave a ball up for a 50-50, Tyreek and Waddle aren't coming down with 50-50s. And these are the types of things. And if you look at the Buccaneers this year, and I'm going to cite them a lot because that's the team I watch the most, you know, Mike Evans won the Buccaneers a lot of football games by catching those 50-50 balls, by catching contested catches in the end zone. And he made Baker Mayfield look good when Baker Mayfield was coming into his own and just finding his feet in the team. Big body receiver who's just going to grab a lot of balls. And that's who the ball went to. And it, you know, Ndunze is going to make a respectable quarterback look pretty good. And that is what he's going to be a coach's dream from an attitude perspective, from a character perspective, dressing room, locker room perspective. I love this kid. I genuinely am probably a bit higher than most because I love Washington players. And I just love like the personality in this kid. He's the kind of dude you want to go and have a beer with.
Yes, exactly. And I think you're right with me. I've got him at exactly 105 at the process as well, Murph. So we're right in cahoots here with
love that.
But I'm big fan of the guy as well. So moving on now, we finally got a running back 106, right? A running back coming off the board. Trevon Henderson appears to be the leading candidate. I may have missed it, Murph. Has he actually declared yet? There's rumors that he might go back.
Yeah, there is a few rumors he might go back. He hasn't officially declared as of a few hours ago. So it might change, and you might be listening to this, and he's gone back and it's been competing with me. I'm at this point of the draft where, I'll be honest with you, I am reaching a bit. And I like, if I was to sit here and tell you, is he my sixth favorite player in this draft? No. He's not my sixth favorite player in this draft. But I'm starting to think of this with a dynasty hat on, right? Mm. We've had five picks. I think those five players are safe picks. I think they're going to bring with you some production.
Yep.
You're sitting at the 106. You're kind of on the cusp of playoffs last season. A couple of things need to go your way. You probably had a couple of injuries.
Yep.
You're now at the point where I'm thinking, I want to gamble. The 106 doesn't normally yield a particularly high volume player. You're not going to get a high caliber player. So look, you can take a very decent wide receiver next. You can take a tight end next. I want to shoot for the moon. And I really think Henderson is going to be one of those players that could potentially help you shoot for the moon. He's a good receiving back. He's going to he's going to get into teams very, very quickly. Whoever takes him, he's not going to go round one.
No.
Right. He's going to go in the Breece Hall range, somewhere around 33 to 38 in the draft. That's kind of where I see him coming off the board. I think he's great catching back. He's got real, real physical toughness. He will batter people and he'll fight for yards. The only concern with him is injury. And that's why he's going to be a day two pick. So I think actually if he can stay healthy, we're looking at a player that could walk into a pretty dominant role. 15 to 18 touch role is not outside of something he could handle because of the fact he can be an every down back. He's got skill set to be. I'm not saying projecting him to be a bell cow. He's going to play with someone. But I think depending on where he goes, he could be in a position where he could dominate the touches. And I'm thinking of in that range of players of teams that could be taking him. You know, New England wouldn't be a complete disaster if they get rid of Zeke, which is likely. Yeah. Washington, you know, it could be confusing there because you've got Gibson, but Gibson, I think, is a player they're not really high on. I think there's an opportunity there with talent that he could generate and get past everyone there. Arizona, James Conner's not getting any younger. Yeah. There's some in that range of teams. Even Carolina, Miles Sanders didn't really do a job there at 33. There's a stack of teams at the start of the second round where you think actually if he went there, you know, New England's probably the worst one of those four because of Ramadre. Ramadre can blow the doors off. Like, all these kind of players are, you know, the only one of those teams that really blew the doors off was James Conner towards the end, but he's nearly 30.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Titans are not picking far from their replacement. I mean, I know you got Tajay Spears, and he does sort of look. Yeah, I mean, that could be a bit more of an awkward fit because of the fact you've got Tajay there. That could cap him a little bit, but I think there's some good areas for him to really sort of around that sort of second round spot. Chargers again, you know, Austin Eckler, he's aged. That could be a great spot for him. The Giants, because it looks like Saquon Barkley's going to go. You know, there's a load of teams there. I think
there's so many. Like, the running back position is an absolute mess right now. And even though we do talk about it, sort of like it is a weaker like running back class, they've got a better opportunity than a lot of classes before them. So that could kind of be like a rising tide raises all boats, right?
And this is why I think it's worth the gamble. So. Yeah. I think he's the best running back in this class. I think situationally, he's probably going to land in a pretty decent spot. The draft capital I expect to be there. I think everything kind of points to me that if he stays healthy, he's going to be a productive player at this level and could sneak into the back end of the RB1 conversation if a lot of things break right for him. And I think that's where I'm gambling. I'm thinking a player who's going to get me closer to the playoffs. I look at these wide receivers and tight ends next. I have not a knock on any of them. I think they're all probably better players, but I think from a fantasy perspective, do they elevate my team as much as what Henderson's going to do? I don't think so, if it all breaks right. So it's a gamble pick, but I that's where I go with it here.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love it. I wouldn't be shocked to see like Henderson sort of cementing himself around here after he's found himself on a roster somewhere, after he's found himself on a team, and people going, oh, actually, now I've connected all the dots, I'm actually going to take them here. Like once they see everything. So yeah, I like that you're putting them in here nice and early as well. So we'll move off running back. We're going back to the wide receiver. Well, you've got Keon Coleman out of Florida State, who, I mean, looked red hot the first half of the year. Got to be honest, Murph, real tailed off towards the end. What do you think happened there?
A lot of it, if quarterback situation, injury. And I'll be honest, I think he held a bit in the tank. I think he quit a bit. I think he thought, I've done enough. When the team are winning games, let's be honest, the ACC is not exactly a great conference. It's why they didn't get into the playoffs. I know people want to spin this narrative of, oh, well, you know, injury and lost their quarterback and Travers is down. They're not going to go anywhere now without Travers. And yeah, listen, the ACC is just not a great conference. It's not. There's just not that many good teams in it. You know, and unfortunately, you're going to look down on it. And like people saying it was a big outrage, they weren't there. I thought it was a bigger outrage. Georgia didn't get in the top four.
Yeah. But Georgia, yeah. We could talk about it.
Yeah, of course we could. But we are where we are. And I'm not a Florida State lover. I went to the University of Florida. You know, I don't sit here and say nice things about the University of Florida. But he was a really, really productive player. And again, we're going back to this whole point of archetypal players, 6'4", 210, big receiver. Again, he's going to win a lot of contested catches. But where he's really good is he's got such great control. And he's just a great athlete. This guy has absolutely everything. Yeah. He really could end up ahead of Ndunze and ahead of Neighbors. Like, it really could happen. I've gone behind, but I think, because of what you're saying, the fact that it tailed off at the tail end of last year, I think for me, because of the fact he isn't where he's going to hurt, his 40 time is going to be crucial. Because if he doesn't put up a strong 40 time, I don't think he's going to put up a blistering 40 time, but if he falls out of 4.53 range, if he is like 4.6, 4.7, he's going to be in trouble. He's going to be in trouble. And this is the only thing on him. But I think you're talking exceptional player here. The only other thing I would say, and again, so whereas I know, and Florida State fans are going to lynch me for this, right?
Florida State players of recent years, I don't think have that same grit and determination I was talking about out of a school like Washington. Yeah. So Jameis Winston came from Florida, didn't really light it up. Derwin James was the exception. I actually thought Derwin James has a lot of that in spades and been really unlucky with injuries. And I think for me now, he's a shadow of the player that he once was. But I don't think I'd knock his personality, character, etc. But I'm not seeing the same high caliber of great and determined players. And a lot of that's to do with the conference and the competitive nature. And there are a lot of changings in coaches in recent years. You know, they've gone through four or five coaches in the last 6 years. You know, and that doesn't, it doesn't help breed that culture. It's not the fault of the players. I want to make that really clear. I don't look at Coleman and think it's his fault. I don't think he's been given the greatest opportunity to succeed. And again, this all points back to what you said, quit second half of the season. He's thinking about himself. Yeah. He's thinking about his draft stock. That's great. I understand all of that. I will not knock him for 1 second, but do I want to sit here and say that he is going to put the team over himself at times? I'm not so sure. And I think that's my whole thing is, he narrows down for me over the other guys in that area. And I'm not saying he's a bad person. I'm not saying he's a bad character. I'm not saying he's going to walk in and stink the locker room up. I just don't think he's got that same grit, determination. And I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I'm only assessing it on me. It's a personal opinion. But my, you know, when you're in a culture of constant change, it's harder to grow, develop. Like constantly. Yeah. And in my day job, I see that. You know, I work for organizations that go through a lot of growth, and you go through times where you don't get a lot of development and you have to go outside and get it yourself. And that's kind of the nature. And that's my only knock on it. And again, I could be wrong, and I'm happy to stick my hand up here and say, I got it dead wrong if I am. But my assessment is that's my one concern, other than, just whether or not he's going to end the speed.
Yeah, well, let's hope he, wherever he ends up, it is someone that has that, like, sort of culture where it is that, that Washington culture we talked about, right, where he can really get his head down and learn, hopefully, from a veteran player that can sort of take him under his wing. I think he needs that more than maybe the others, like a real, like, veteran guy to take him under their wing and sort of help him along the way. I think that'll be really good for Keon Coleman, who's got all the physical attributes for sure to be successful. And we're sticking at the wide receiver. Well, a lot of wide receivers in this class. And this is a guy I've been calling kind of the forgotten man, right? We got Emeka Igbuka. Because of Marvin Harrison Jr., right? People kind of forgetting Igbuka's a real good player too.
Yeah, although we have been stitched up here in the fact that he's recently announced he's going back to school.
Oh, well, I know. Way too early, 2025 mock draft.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, literally 4 hours ago, 3 hours ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? One of the points I was going to make, Murph, was I actually think he should go back to school because he deserves a chance to become the man at Ohio State, and he should be the man at Ohio State now that Marvin Harrison has announced that he is 100% coming out, right? But let's chat about Igbuka anyway because he – he's a real, like, a very different receiver to Marvin Harrison, but still could be good for your teams, whatever he eventually comes out, right?
100%. And listen, you know, you have to go back to 2022. He had a great season, 10 touchdowns, over 1,100 yards passing, receiving. You know, he showed everything that you want to see. And I look at these players, I think he's probably one of the best route runners in this class. Well, he's not in this class anymore. but he was.
Him and Luke Burden, right up there, right?
Yeah, they could be great. You know, great route runners, polished. I see a lot of similarities in Jerry Jeudy, which again isn't going to excite people because Jerry Jeudy's production has fallen off a cliff. But but Jerry Jeudy's one of the best route runners out there. He's so polished, so smooth. I think we got a player here who's very, very similar. But I think you're right. He had to go back to school. Yeah. I think he's got the opportunity on a big stage to become the man. And I think that's where the question marks will be. Good number two, good safe pair of hands, shown productivity.
but is he box office? That's what we want to see. That's the question mark. I liked him because I always like polished route runners. I think you're always going to win in the NFL if you're a great route runner. So I'm glad he's going back. He's going to refine his craft. He's going to be even better in 12 months' time. And I think we could be talking about a player who will be near the top of the class if things break right for him in 2024. Well,
I'll see you in 12 months' time, Murph, right back in the hot seat. We'll chat more about him. We'll chat more about him.
And hopefully he's higher than 108. That's why.
Let's hope so, actually. I'll remember this next year whenever we're chatting. So let's move on. 109, hey, we got, I mean, the first tight end off the board. Everybody's tight end one, right? Brock Bowers coming out of Georgia. I mean, this guy, not necessarily your prototypical tight end, a bit smaller than some guys perhaps, but he can still do it all, right?
Yeah. The problem with him is he's a tight end. That's literally the only thing. Now, if you've ever followed me and you've ever listened to any of my content, you know I value tight ends about as much as I value kickers. I just don't really see a value in them. I'm happy to be off the Porter and you know, I got on the Trey McBride trade because no one really picked him up, and I was quite happy to just scoop him up for free and take the volume. The bottom line is, we've seen it time and time again, elite players at the position not produce, and it's not the fault of any of these players. It's not the fault of Bowers. It's not the fault of Kyle Pitts. It's the fault of the system and the way that the NFL views tight ends, with the exception of Travis Kelce and Andy Reid. There are not many coaches that sit there and put a heck of a lot of stock into the tight end position. Unfortunately, we're lucky Dan Campbell does, so that makes the head coach count about two. But there aren't many, many, many more. And that is the problem, is where does Brock Bowers go and reach his potential? I genuinely don't know, because I don't know where I want him to go, because I think almost wherever he goes will be a disappointment for what people want him to be.
Yeah, the hype's so high, right?
Yeah, I mean, what's a great landing spot for Brock Bowers right now?
I said earlier, I mean, the Chargers are at five, right? They're getting, but you don't know who's going to be coaching him, right?
It's but also, hard to say. You don't. But if Kellen Moore is still there, notoriously, he's never been a big tight end guy. Yeah. That feels like a waste for me.
So yeah, you're right. The tight end guys have taken, right?
Yeah. So I sit there and I'm looking at teams that would utilize the tight end significantly and whether or not there's a decent opportunity. Denver at 12, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe with Sean Payton. Maybe. That might be half interesting. We don't know what's going on in Vegas. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Depends who comes in.
They just took a young Titan, right? The last draft as well.
Probably not likely. You're not going to see New Orleans there. You're not going to see, and Indianapolis don't care. Seattle don't care. Jacksonville got Ingram. They're not going to do it. Cincy don't care. Green Bay don't care. They took so many Titans recently. Tampa Bay won't. They've taken quite a few young Titans. Yeah. Arizona have got McBride. This is what I mean. This is the run of the middle of the first round. The Rams, if he goes there, that won't be great. Pittsburgh won't take him. Miami, well, he might as well just retire if he goes to Miami because they don't use tight ends. Philly have got Goddard, not going to take him. I mean, Kansas City at 26, if he becomes the heir apparent to Kelce and he sits a year, that could be interesting.
But I just don't see. I don't see Brett Veach doing that. Wasting a pick.
Yeah. No, I don't either. So this is my point: is I put him at 109. Realistically, I'll be honest. If I'm sitting here at the 109, I ain't taking him because I don't see where he I don't see where he sees value. I don't see where he's ever going to reach a first round return. So I've put him in here as kind of let's talk about him more than I'm willing. I think I'll be honest. I'm only interested on him when the first number starts with a two. And it's not any fault of the player. I think he's a terrific player. and I can't stand Georgia. So that's high praise for me that I think he is an outstanding tight end. But then I think Noah Fant was an outstanding tight end who has done absolutely nothing in the NFL. I think we've seen lots of great tight ends come into the league and not have the opportunity to do something good. And I think Brock Bowers, unfortunately, could be in that list. So I'm really concerned about where he goes. And that's my only knock on him and why he's this low. I see people taking him at 104 and I'm like, do it. If you're in my league and you take Brock Bowers at 104, I'll do a cameo video for you. I'll do whatever you want. Take him at 104. Like, I'll bung you some fab to take him at 104. Like, you want 10% of my fab next year to take him at 104? Done deal. Like, I'll give it to you all day long. Take him, because I can't see the ceiling for him.
I think it's been a few years since Kyle Pitts that people are just ready to be hurt again, Murph.
This is what I mean. And then also because people have been hit with Sam Laporta
and Kincaid to an extent, right?
Laporta, Kincaid, and McBride. And people are like, happy days, it's tight end season again. And like, I welcome it. Do it. Take Brock Bowers at 104. In any of my leagues, please do it. 104, 105, I'll blow you a kiss all day long. You get my blessing.
Love it. Love it. So Bowers in there, kind of in there.
Kind of. He's right? There. He's so, there to talk about.
Hey, Murph, we got another running back in at 110. I got to tell you, I loved this name whenever you said it. We got Marquise Bucky Irving in at 110. He's been a hell of a lot of fun. Well, the Oregon Ducks have been a hell of a lot of fun to watch in general this year, but Bucky Irving's looked great.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Because of the fact that Devon Achane has come into the league with this explosiveness and this getting in space and making guys play, people love the new hotness and people will chase that. And you know what? If you want the next Devon Achane, this is your guy. This is your guy, because he has got it all. He is so much fun to watch. He literally can just get into space and he can just absolutely... What I love about him is he's only like 185, 190 pounds. He'll run into people like he's 220. He doesn't care. He's just like, see you later. You're gone. You're on your back, son. I'm off. I love him. He just has everything for me. And I'm like, again, we're talking about opportunity here. This is a team at 110. You just missed out on the championship game. You're pretty close. You could pick a safe pick here. But let's be honest, the 110 is yielding you a successful player, what, 9, 11% of the time? Not often that you're getting great returns here. So I want to take a wild card. I want to take a guy who could just be lightning in a bottle and return me some just outrageous performances. And I look at the guys left in the draft. He's number one on that list in that criteria. He could absolutely flame out and be an absolute disaster. And I look at things and think, well, Devon Achane, people went wild over what he can do. And I think Irving's got a lot of very similar traits.
Yeah.
So I sit there and think, okay, well, if someone's going to look at that game plan and think, oh yeah, actually I wouldn't mind scheming a nice guy out wide in games to take advantage of tired defenses in the second half and put up a load of garbage time points. Yeah, I'm in. I think he's going to do a great job. I think you're going to see a week next year. I'm going to throw this out there now where he's going to literally blow the doors off a team in the second half and put up a top two, top three running back week. And everyone's going to go, oh, boom. Crap. And I think also I look at him as a player and think he can go on any roster.
Anyone can use an Irving, right?
100%. Anyone can use him. The only worry you're going to get from him is he going to get a high-end, high level of touches. But you know what? I almost love him in a situation where he is the 1B.
I was just going to say the same thing, Murph. Exactly the same thing.
If he goes onto a good team, like imagine if he ended up on the 49ers and was the 1B, the Christian McCaffrey. That would be lights out, because they'll rest McCaffrey. He's getting a bit older. They'll utilize, they'll get out in front, and then they'll send Irving on to just hammer teams in the second half. I'm dialing into that. Like, that's going to be amazing.
They did it this year at Oregon, right? They used James. Is it James, right? They used him a lot of the time just to wear people down. Then they brought Irving on, just run rings around him. Like, 100%. It worked a treat.
Yeah.
So I really like the pick.
Yeah. So I'm gambling. This is a gamble pick. it's absolutely not projecting him to be as good as some of these other players that I'm going to talk about. But I do absolutely believe that in this position, if I'm sitting at a 110, knowing the likelihood of success of this pick is pretty low, give me the wild card. Give me the guy who could put up 30 fantasy points in a game. Because the rest of these guys, I don't see that. I see nice flex level, maybe low end wide receiver 2 weeks. I see some good performances here and there, but I see a lot of just very safe, floory wide receiver 3, low flex, bye week cover kind of players. Irvin could literally blow the top off and win you a week.
Love it. I love it. I did smile when you sent me last area. I smiled when I seen his name as well.
It's like, chaos, right? Yeah, but I put my chaos hat on. He's a chaos player. Yeah. I'm in. Like, I'll take him here.
And this guy, maybe same kind of energy at 111 with. I struggle to pronounce this guy's first. Is it Andonai?
I'm terrible with names. Don't ask me.
I'm gonna run with
Aaron. Adonai.
Let's
just call him AD. Let's just call him AD.
Eddie Mitchell, right? This is someone I put out a tweet just last week. I was impressed with him again, but the Texas team, they do not throw the ball to this guy enough. What are they doing?
I don't know. I don't understand how Eddie Mitchell, what did he end up with? I wrote it down. Let me just see. He hasn't even got 100 catches in his career. And I'm
what is going
like,
on?
What are you doing? what do you know that we don't? Because I look at him and think he's 6'4", he's built massive, he's going to be an absolute bomb. Like, if you're sitting there as a DB guarding AD Mitchell, I want no part of that. No, say, just take the ball. I'm out. Like, again, chaos player. Like, he also just, the way that he just runs, he's just amazing. I don't understand. Great. Yeah, I don't get it. No. I don't get it. I don't get how he's been overlooked, because I just look at him and think box office. And again, I think you're looking at these sorts of players. And again, I'm looking at the realm of pick here. I'm shooting ceiling, right? Yeah. I'm shooting ceiling. I don't want the safe play. I want someone who is either going to add something to my squad or is going to sit on my taxi for a year and I'm cutting him. Because the 111 is not as valuable as most people seem to think. And when I sit here, normally in this range of drafts, I'll trade these picks to, if I'm in a contending team, I'll be honest with you, any of my championship team, finalist teams, all these picks don't exist. They're gone. And it wasn't because I'm out on this class. It's because once I'm past 106, 107, I'm thinking, everyone's a gamble. And actually, I'll take a proven commodity if it's going to get me closer to winning a ship. So I don't have a lot of these picks. But if I do ever pick in this spot, I'm taking a player like AD Mitchell because I just think it could all happen. It might not. Mm-hmm. But actually, I'd rather take a guy who could end up as a wide receiver 1, he could flatline, versus someone who's just going to give me wide receiver 3 flex production, and I'm never going to use him. Yeah. Because if I'm picking in this spot, I have a pretty good roster for the next 3 years or 2 years. So whoever I pick here is going to have an exceptional ceiling to even trouble my roster.
Yeah.
So why take someone who is just a safe play and you think, I'll take a player here. And it's no slight on the talent. It's no tie on the talent of a few of these players. But I just sit there and think, give me some chaos. Give me a player. Like, we haven't talked about Brian Thomas. He's a perfectly fine player. Yeah. Trey Benson, fine player. Troy Franklin, good player. Xavier Worthy, good player. Like, all these are good players.
The guy they were throwing to the whole time.
Right, exactly. But are these guys going to put a dent in your roster at this stage of the draft? Nah. Give me Eddie Mitchell. I think if someone believes in him and someone throws in the ball, especially someone good, I mean, like, there you go. You want to receive one of the Chiefs? Imagine AD Mitchell at the Chiefs.
Sign me up.
Because you've got the perfect duo there with Rashee Rice and his size and speed. Yep. And he's sort of like, you've got that perfect little and large combination going on there. Oh, AD Mitchell at the Chiefs will be so lit. Like,
Oh my word, Patrick Mahomes could turn him into a legit pro bowler.
If we don't trade up to get Marvin Harrison, I'll take AJ Mitchell. I'll take him as a signer.
It'd be so fun.
Yeah.
So then the only thing I question is, why do they not throw him the ball? Is it a character thing? That's the part we don't know. But
maybe he's hurt. I don't know. I'm not sure. Like,
but less than his whole career. Right? I mean, that's the only red flag for me is why. But if there's not a proper answer, I'd gamble. I'm taking him.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Let's hope he gets a chance. So we got one more pick. You're rounding it out with a guy. We talked about him a bit before the show. You just love him, right? Michael Penix Jr. Talk to me.
Yeah, I'm really, really like irrationally in love with him. And like people are looking like, you haven't put Daniels here? What is wrong with you? Like Bo Nix? Like, first of all, I'll talk about Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is going to be one of the great draft busts. I'm just so not in on Nix at all. Like, crack on. Whoever takes him, good luck with that. You might never see him play a down in the NFL, and that wouldn't shock me. It's not a slight on the guy. Yeah. He's a perfectly nice guy. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
He screams to me, really good college quarterback. But yeah. It's hard to see how it translates, right?
He screams to me Marcus Mariota, but not as good. And that tells you everything you need to know.
He's like
a little brother of Marcus Mariota. That's kind of how I see him. And I'm like, well, Marcus Mariota wasn't that good at the top level. So, and again, hey, they went to the similar school. They went to the same school, similar systems. That system makes quarterbacks generally look a lot better than they are. It's always a red flag for me when I see an Oregon quarterback. Yes, we've talked about the exception that is Justin Herbert, but I'm out. But let's talk about Penix. I've already talked about the score. I love the character. Yeah. I absolutely love the character. I feel like Penix Jr. should have won the Heisman. I feel very strongly about
that. He must have been so close. It was between him and Daniels for me. I didn't think Harrison had much of a chance.
I don't understand. Because did anyone have Washington playing in the championship game at the start of the year?
No.
So he's taken a team that no one fancied to the championship game. Like, give the guy the due he's deserved. He had a phenomenal season. I mean, look at his season. Back-to-back seasons of 4,600 passing yards. 66 touchdowns in his last 2 years. Only 17 interceptions. But it's the character. It's the ball placement. The way, again, player throws a pretty ball. He could throw a ball like a dart. It's just impeccable to watch. But the character, he's old. I don't normally like old quarterbacks. He's going to be 25, I believe, at the start of the season.
Yeah.
That is old. That is a concern. But I think he could be one of these rare outliers that kind of put it together a bit late. Oh, sorry, 24. Maybe he's 24 at the start.
24. Well, I think it's what he's had injuries that kind of held him back, right? 100%. It's not like he's stayed in because he's bad. He's kind of stayed in to kind of finish the job, right?
100%. And he's not great on his legs. And that's where people are going to have a bit of a knock on him. And like, he is the most contested player in this draft. There's people that will mock him as high as like 104. And there's people that will mock him as low as like the third round. And he divides and polarizes opinions probably as much as Malik Willis did a couple of years ago. But here's the difference. Malik Willis was nowhere near as good as Penix Jr. They're not even in the same league. No. Like, Penix Jr. for me has got everything I want in a quarterback. But it's that character, the grit, the determination. He's done this the hard way on an unsexy school, taking them to a championship game. Like, he has done absolutely everything you can do in your college career to make yourself an elite player. I, for me, would not be shocked if someone takes him in the top 10. I think, for me, he should go in the top 10. He should go in the top 5. I'm looking at the teams that need quarterbacks. Washington, need a quarterback. Yeah. New England, need a quarterback. You know, these teams, look at the teams that need quarterbacks. We've got Washington.
It's half the league.
New England. the Giants, maybe, need a quarterback. Yeah. Tennessee need a quarterback. Atlanta need a quarterback. Like, he can't fall past 8, really.
Yeah.
He can't fall past eight. And, like, he makes all of those teams better. Like, imagine Penix Jr. in Atlanta. That's a scary thought. With the weapons they got there, with Drake London, with Kyle Pitts. Yeah.
They've got, like, that basketball team Bijan? Mentality, right?
Oh, my
yeah.
word.
Throwing it up to those guys, yeah.
And for some reason... High-quality leadering?
I have him visual. I don't know why. I can't get him at the scene inside my head throwing a Chris Olave. I just love that. But I don't know where they pick. But in my head, but I think it's too. They're picking too late maybe to get him.
That, and I think as well, the contract on...
Oh, they've got that horrible car contract on.
Yeah, that car contract is pretty prohibitive. And, and I don't think you can sit Penix Jr. for 2 years.
Nah.
No, and I think that
he'll be 40.
He'll be collecting his pension before we know it.
Oh, but no, you're right. Atlanta, that's a pretty sweet fit for Michael Penix Jr. Right?
Yeah, even Tennessee. I think Tennessee, yeah. Atlanta. I look at that. Oh, I tell you where it would be spicy. Just to really stir the pot. The Jets.
Where? Ooh.
One year under Rodgers, that Rodgers have a meltdown at taking Penix Jr. at 10. Because let's be honest, the Jets aren't that far away. They don't need that many pieces from really competing. So why not take the quarterback? In the host, you're not going to be picking in the round to get one. Rodgers is 40. And to be honest, he's not doing his media career any good with what he's doing attacking the media right now. So... No. I'd be looking at Penix Jr. the Jets and thinking, hey, not a bad little insurance option if something was to happen there. I think Penix Jr. has got to be going top 10 for me. I love this guy. And if he does, I absolutely love him in fantasy because I think he's going to throw a lot. I know people are going to say, you didn't talk about Daniels. Daniels is fine. Daniels is a good player. But, and again, we're talking super flex. People think, oh, maybe you should have. To be honest, I could and probably should in a super flex draft have put Daniels in over, say, Bowers and a couple of players that I've talked about only because I talked. But then I like the chaos, and I don't think Daniels is going to give me that return. So give me AD Mitchell, give me Bucky, give me all those guys. They're just going to have a bit. And Michael Pace Jr., I think, is another one. I think he just brings a bit of chaos. And I love it. So I've gone with guys I just love, and I've gone with guys who I think have a super high ceiling. Daniels, I think he's going to be a very productive guy. I think he's going to be good. Do I think he's going to be great? Not for me.
Yeah, he's going to be real interesting to watch. As are all these guys. And Murph, that brings us to the end of your mock draft here. Another absolute smash hit. Before we let you go. Do you have any names you're like, you know what, he's not in my first round. He might not even be in, like, my second round. Is there anyone you're like, I keep looking at this guy, and he's like, maybe got, for me, I've got one. It's Cody Schrader, the running back out of Missouri.
Okay.
I keep looking at him, and I keep going, this guy's really good. I know, like, I haven't heard anyone speak about him. It's like, he's really, really, really good. So
yeah.
I'm keeping my eye on him. So is there anyone for you that you're like, keep an eye on this guy? Like,
I'm gonna throw a couple of names out there for you. Some players I like. I like Devontae Walker. Probably a bit more than others.
I like him.
But I'm a bit of a fan. I think he's someone who could just be really, really interesting to watch. I really like the running back out of TCU, Emmanuel Bailey. I think he's going to be a really, really interesting. So,
he's a funny one because I've just sort of graded out running backs based on what I've seen in the 24 season. And I've just done it based on numbers. And Bailey is way up there. I'm like, how did that happen? I didn't really realize it at the time, but I've given him a really high score.
Yeah, he has a lot of attributes that are just very, very interesting. And I really like what he does. He just does the basics very, very well. It's not a wide skill set to him. But I just think any guy that can execute the basics really well is going to have a productive career in the NFL. So yeah. Bailey is in there for me. Keep an eye. The real wild card is Will Shepard out of Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see what the NFL thinks of Will Shepard. Because let's be honest, Vanderbilt's not a great school. They're buried in a conference where they're just basically like the last kid picked.
Yeah.
Like, everyone picks on Vanderbilt. They're a school that the tourists get hammered 50
50 points a game most games. Like, they just a team that get walloped very frequently. And it's unfortunate that they're in a conference with Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee and all these other great schools. So I always think it's really interesting when you get a recruit that's getting some buzz out of a school like that, because they don't win many games. And then when you go back and look at what Will Shepard does, he actually has a lot of really sneaky ability there. Like, he just has, it's just something about him that pops a little bit. And I think he's played on some pretty bad teams and has been pretty productive. That's always a good sign for me. So I'm keen to just see what happens with him. Could flame out, could be nothing, but I am intrigued.
On my notes for Will Shepard, there's a giant star next to him saying, must watch more. Because I like what I've seen. I'm like, I want to watch some more of you, actually. Because, he popped out to me as well. And Murph, I can't let you go without chatting a little bit. You haven't mentioned any Florida players. I'll let you have a run at it. I mean, you know, I quite like him Florida this year. I don't know if he's eligible this year, but young ETN, he looked pretty good.
Why did you have to do that?
Sorry.
Well, he's not at Florida anymore. He's at Georgia.
Oh my, I genuinely did not know. I am so sorry. I genuinely did not know.
Christmas Eve, he went to, Christmas Eve. In fact, Christmas Eve, he transferred to Georgia. And so there's a really funny meme. I'll send it with you after, where there's basically a meme of his announcement on Christmas Eve transferring to Georgia. And then Christmas Day is a guy in a Gators Christmas jumper holding an ETN shirt that his wife had bought him.
Oh, no. That's hot. Georgia of all the... No.
Yeah, so thanks for that. Cheers, sorry, pal. Man. I thought we were friends. You've absolutely done me. Yeah, no. So he's a bulldog next year. So, I have great fun watching him destroy us next year. Cheers, pal. I guess really that leaves us very, very thin on the ground. Purcell is probably...
Oh, yeah.
Ricky Purcell is probably the only guy.
He had that catch, right?
He'll get drafted. Do I think he's gonna be someone that he's a late round flyer in rookie drafts? I think there's something there, but I don't know if he's gonna put it together. Florida just did a bit of a bad run, bad recruiting classes last couple of years. They've struggled with keeping talent. but they have recruited really well. They should be a good school in about 2 years. This recruiting class coming in seems to be good. It's always tricky until you actually see it on the field. They've struggled at the quarterback position since Trask is gone. That's been a really big issue. They just haven't really got an experienced and seasoned play caller in there. So they need to get that sorted. And then I think you'll start seeing. But young ETN, he's going to be a good player. A lot of people are going to talk about him next year because he's going to be a Georgia Bulldog. So cheers, pal. Thanks for that. I appreciate that.
what a way to end the show. great. So this is Murph's last appearance of the time. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. So Murph, for the final time, you want to tell people, like, how can they find you online if they don't know already?
Where can you find me? So you can find me at Murph_NFL. I'll be doing some mock drafts with the staff over at Fantasy Pros this year, so you can get links to the work there. I'm going to be doing some stuff with Pro Football Network in the off season. There's definitely some IDP rookie stuff I'm going to be doing. Still kind of firming up what more I'm going to be doing. And then fingers crossed, if the health prevails, a Fantasy Football Playbook 2024 will be out. Wasn't out last year, just was too sick to get it done. But I've got a load of good stuff I wrote that I'm going to repurpose and update and put it into this year. So that's exciting. But and I'm running a lot of charity leagues at the moment. I'm raising a lot of money for Crohn's and Colitis UK. I suffer from ulcerative colitis, so it's a cause near and dear to my heart. There's the FFCC charity tournament this year that I do every year, 6 year. But I'll be doing other charity tournaments, listener league tournaments, and I always have some vacancies as well. So if you like really interesting redraft formats, I have some really crazy formats that I use. Get in touch because I've got anything from like a
my favorite format I do is for my home league, and it's or one of my home leagues. I've got a couple. It's called the Ultimate Fantasy Championship, and it's basically four different formats through the year. So you draft every 4 weeks. So the first one is a franchise flex, so it's a two drafter. So you draft the teams you're allowed to draft players from. It's two copies of each team. And then you draft against somebody else, but then it's all you do a snake draft, and you've got to think about, okay, well, if I take this player, I'm not going to get these players. So it's not just thinking about picking, you're picking from a really reduced pool, and then you've got to think about where your spots are in the draft and who you're competing against to get certain players. That's chaos. Those first 4 weeks, then we do an IDP plus. So you got to have some IDP knowledge. So you go completely from having that to an IDP plus. Yeah. Then we do a super flex tight end premium. And then we end with a PPR. So you redraft your team four times through the season. And then you basically got to do quite well in all four formats to get through to the playoffs. And then, you got your PPR knowledge is what's going to have to get you through to win a belt. So I won it this year.
Wow.
Nice. It's a cool format.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good format. So I'll be doing probably that. And another league format I'll be doing this year. I did this for the Champions of Champions, which I also won. So a good season last year. It's definitely not going to be a good one next season. but this one's a really interesting format, and I want to get people in this. So if you like the sound of this, I will run this league. Shout me, add, like, DM me on Twitter. We'll do it. It's basically a so it was a 14 team league. No waivers. So what happened is you draft with six spots on your bench, and you would drop, you have to drop somebody from your starting lineup every week that's not a kicker or a DST. So you have to drop a starter from your lineup every single week, and every 2 weeks you do a supplemental draft. In the first 2 weeks it's random, so it's a random draw. From week four onwards it's reverse order, supplemental snake draft. So, and then the kicker to that is there's three time machine tokens. So we've all had that experience in fantasy where you've started the wrong player and someone has gone off and put 40 points on your bench. Guess what? You have a token that up until 8 a.m. on Tuesday, you can make that switcheroo. You get three in the regular season. So you can literally go from like, oh my God, I've left someone on my bench. I've left Devon Achan. He scored 40.
Amari Cooper.
I've left Amari Cooper on my bench. Well, he went off in the playoffs, so you wouldn't have been able to use that. But Devon Achan, when he went off against Denver. You go and put a time machine token in. Now you can use three at once. You can use one. You stretch out through the season. Also, your opponent might. And also, you play against the league median every week. So you might use it to just boost up against the median. Like, oh, well, I've lost my lineup, but I might dink a win. It's a really cool, fun format. I loved it because it just adds a bit of chaos on a Tuesday at 8 o'clock. You think oh, I might have won, and then actually, oh crap, I lost.
Yeah.
And then you might use a token thinking your opponent might use a token, and then you don't, and you've burned one.
I love the token idea. You know what, Murph? You said you got, if you got spaces, sign me up.
I haven't actually kicked it off, but I will do. So I'll kick it off. And I think what we should do is we'll turn it into a Jersey League. We'll put a little bit of money, not a ridiculous amount, like just a few quid. And then we'll pull that together. Winner gets a jersey of their choice.
Love it. Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Well, you're in. So there we go.
I'm in.
A Dynasty Hot Seat Special League.
Yes. I absolutely love it.
Good. Because I need to have an assistant for it because I can't, obviously, I have visibility to all the tokens. So I need to have someone every week who I can go to and say, hey, this is the token for this week, etc. And
I'll call Kumish. I'll help out with the hot seat franchise. Let's do it. Amazing. Well, I'm glad we got over the whole, we'll not mention his name. I'm glad we got over that more from the end. thank you so much for everyone joining in. Hey, if you've made it this far and you've not hit like and subscribe, what the hell are you doing? Come on, let's get involved here, right? If you've not done that already, Murph. Thank you so much. Make sure, guys, you're checking out the 5-Yard Rush, all their team and everything they're doing, along with the rest of Murph's doing. And thank you so much for joining. We'll see you again very soon. Remember, for anything Dynasty you need to know, keep it locked right here on the Certified Inferno. I will see you next time.